For October the 13th, 2023, we talk about Payday 3, Forza Motorsport, Cocoon, and much more. Welcome to Level 476. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah. What's going on?
Not a whole heck of a lot.
What drums hast thou drummed?
I don't know. Honestly, I have no intelligent things to say about this. because it's like,
you're in good company.
We learned some rhythm that I think is called a muffalato.
Okay. Is that like some kind of deli meat?
Yeah, like that's the problem. So I am learning a whole bunch of stuff. It is all in various Arabic type languages. So like,
gotcha.
I can speak intelligently about none of it.
Right. So like you learn the practice, but also there's a lot of I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's all sorts of things where it's like, oh yeah, you know, this is how you're doing it, but it's also important to realize this isn't actually how people that play this music think about it, because they're not thinking about it from like a background of Western drum. The way they're thinking about it is this, and like, yeah, there's just a whole bunch of stuff to it.
This is just
culture. Stop thinking wrong.
This is just culturally what drums is to us. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Nice.
Got your paradiddles and your ruffles and your
polyrhythms and such. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, well, cool. Anything else going on?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Just kind of gearing up for Halloween. Got a Ren Faire coming up. There's a Wicker Man burning in town. Ooh. I'm gonna be going to bunch of Halloween stuff, you know, just all sorts of stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you got a busy time coming up. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Ben, what's going on?
Not much. So behind the scenes, since we're recording a day later than usual, I get to do magic drafts, like a cube draft on Tuesday nights.
Okay.
At the local brewery. And yeah, it's really fun. You do a cube draft with like vintage cubes. So it's like they print out like duplicates or whatever of the cards. So it's not, you know, it's not $1 million set or anything, so you don't feel bad if you like rough them up or anything.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun because it's like really high level cards, so you can kind of try and get like busted combos and stuff like that. And a lot of the people there are like not only really, really nice, but they're also like very, very adventurous with the decks they build and very creative and stuff and very good at assessing card value. So it's fun to play. And then I was especially excited last night because I made it to the finals. It's like 10 people. And Ooh. So the way pairing works, like one person who wins will get paired down round two, and then two people will make it to the finals of being 2-0 against other perfect players. So I got there with a white weenie deck, which is just like small white creatures that's like really low to the ground curve, which sounds, yeah, all this sounds weird.
Are there any miniature dachshunds in your deck?
There are some dog cards in the set. I didn't have them though. I only had humans as my archetype. So I was really proud because I drafted with these guys a few times before. And usually went like 0-3, 1-2 or something like that. I did not win the finals, but I did win one game of the finals out of three. So I was happy with that. So it was a lot of fun. That was
cool.
As of recent, that is the most recent news that I have. So
nice. How about you, Dennis?
I'm doing good. I just finished last night the One Piece live action remake. Hmm.
Okay.
And I know nothing about the original series, the manga or the anime. But I can heartily recommend the live action series. Coming into it fresh, it was a breath of fresh air, I guess, to have a remake not be dark and gritty,
mm-hmm.
which I feel like is the way that everything has gone. This is like, which I think is in tone with One Piece overall, like hyper optimistic, silly, over the top. You know, they don't shave any of the edges off of the crazy anime stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Swordmaster guy's giant freaking sword isn't toned down to look like something that any human could actually carry. It stays a giant freaking sword. Go ahead.
Do they continue to have like the Yakuza thing where in the same way that the characters in Yakuza don't know what a Yakuza is, the characters in One Piece traditionally have no idea what a pirate is?
Oh, no, they talk about they talk about pirates nonstop. I would agree. They don't really seem to understand the concept. Like, it's being a pirate means making your own way and chasing your own dream, no matter what that means.
No, there's a very specific definition of pirate.
and stealing stuff from people. But yeah, no, I mean, I like this version of pirates better.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just as a way to get into that world, which I think it's probably the largest, at least longest running anime out there.
It's pretty big. It's a big commitment.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the largest, longest running, but yeah, it's definitely massive.
It is thousands of episodes, I think.
Yes, yes.
Was it core question? It's something like, could the while completing all of his normal duties, could the president watch the entirety of One Piece during their term? And apparently the answer is if all of the time that Trump spent on golfing was approximately how long it would take you to watch One Piece.
Oh wow.
Huh.
I mean, that says a lot more about the time Trump spends golfing, because that's a huge amount of time.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, but as an on-ramp into the series, like the live action was phenomenal.
Do you know how many volumes the first season covered, or is it telling the same story? Is it like a particular arc that it's pulling from?
It is the Arlong arc, and I don't know if that's the official term for it, but like it centers around him kind of getting his crew together,
mm-hmm.
And then facing down the big bad of Arlong.
Okay.
I believe it also covers like season one of the anime. It's just a condensed form for the live action.
Yeah, that sounds like that's approximately the the first kind of arc, which unfortunately is easily, I mean, by orders of magnitude, the most boring arc.
Mm. Is that right? Well, I can't wait for future seasons
because they haven't even made it to the Grand Line, correct?
They have not. No, they are in the East Blue.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's what I've been doing.
Cool. I've got another media thing. Hey folks, Saw 10 is really good.
What is this?
Oh,
yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
Saw 10.
Now that no one's watching, they can innovate.
They can make good ones.
Wait,
yeah.
are we talking like the leader of a Middle Eastern country?
No. The 10th Saw movie.
Oh.
Yeah, I would argue they've been pretty good since Jigsaw, actually. Like, Jigsaw, Spiral, and this are all pretty good. This is better. It's good. And consequently, over the past week, I have rewatched all of the Saw movies.
Oh no!
For me, like
that's like a meta-Saw right there.
Man, for me, other than Final Destination, I think Saw is probably the film franchise that is most squarely like the type of movie I have no desire to see.
Yeah. Yes, there is torture. You see people have to do horrible things to their bodies, have horrible things done to their bodies. But also there's the stupidest morality on display here.
See,
in terms
that's
of self-justification.
What killed it for me. Like, I think if they took that out and just had it be a horror thing, I might be down for it.
See, it becomes like a, it becomes a thing where they, where they start commenting on it and start you know, doing variations with his different apprentices and copycats and stuff like that. So, but like the character played by Tobin Bell is still doesn't still holds on to it. Saw 10 is interesting, and like a thing that I think would entice more people into going in and seeing it is that it takes place between Saw 1 and Saw 2. So it doesn't really have anything to do with the continuity snarl that they end up getting. Like, it's just literally just a, you know who Jigsaw is. And if you've seen Saw 2, you know who Amanda is, and they're factored in, and there really isn't even like the, a lot of the morality kind of stuff, like, oh, we're trying to fix you and give you a new lease on life. It, like, Saw, Jigsaw, you know, John Kramer is the hero of this. It is entirely from his point of view, and it is a revenge story is what it is. So like, you know, it's pretty good, and you get a lot of time with Tobin Bell and with Shawnee Smith in it, getting to play those characters.
I very much associate this with, like, I knew some freshman philosophy majors. I don't know if literally, but you know what I mean when I say freshman philosophy majors. They're like, no, man, like, he's not a serial murderer because he doesn't technically kill it. It's like, no, you're an idiot.
Yeah, and people who say that are called idiots in the series.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Okay, maybe I would like this series.
Yeah, like, he, it is, you know, the hypocrisy on display is commented on.
I could get behind that then.
Yeah, and the pageantry, especially once Hoffman is introduced Saw 4 and the middle trilogy there, from 5 through Saw 3D / the final chapter, which was not the final chapter. God, it's so stupid and I love it. But Saw 10 is really good.
Did you ever play any of the, was it Dead by Daylight with the Saw characters?
No, I had not. You play as Amanda and you can play as Riggs. I've never played Dead by Daylight at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Same.
I'm surprised that it's not made Hex Crank.
It's been on my, I don't even know if I own a copy of it. It's been like something I've considered for a while, but I'm just, you know me and multiplayer stuff, right?
We've come close to it with Friday the 13th.
We have, yes. Yeah. And with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I understand is similar to it, but yeah. So that's me. I think we should talk about games, though. That would be fun.
Do you want to play a game, Cole?
I played games, and it would be fun to talk about
them.
Do
you want to have played a game, Cole?
Yeah. I would like to have played more games. Yeah. But to do that, we need to do a regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss, and why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, since you have a bit of a time thing, we're going to have you go first.
Yeah, I'll jump in here, and I have a bunch of new stuff to talk about. The first of which is hardware.
Oh,
I'm not familiar with that one.
I might have. What new hardware did you get?
I with Forza Motorsport coming out, I have been keeping my eye on Facebook Marketplace and picked up a racing wheel.
Ooh, nice. Not the same hardware I got.
okay. This is the Thrustmaster T150, which is kind of like the entry-level wheel, but it's
got to be a better name for that.
No.
Yeah, well, that's the company name.
No, that is the greatest name.
So I picked that up with an eye towards Forza Horizon, which came out just a couple days ago, got it like 3 or 4 days before it actually released. So I was like, what can I use this on to kind of get acclimated? And I downloaded the F1, I think it's the 2022 entry, that's free through Game Pass, and played me a Formula One racing sim.
To my mind, as an outsider who doesn't really follow any motorsports, like aside from Burnout, if people are doing Burnout, in real life, doing takedowns and whatnot in Paradise City. F1 seems like the most, it basically seems like cricket, in terms of in terms of scrutability of rules.
Show me the thing about F1
is if there was ever a game, video game to make pay to win, it would be an F1 game because that just makes it more realistic.
Yeah,
Very, very much so. And funnily enough, one of the options that you choose every time you go out on the track, you know, as you're choosing what team's car you want to race with, is do you race with like actual performance or evened out performance?
But
so you know, if you want to be in a McLaren, but you know that it is objectively worse than the top team's cars, you can just hit that button and be able to compete. As someone who, you know, watched Drive to Survive and kind of very casually keeps my eye on F1 headlines, it is not even close in terms of competitiveness between the different teams. And so there really is an advantage on the engineering side of things that's gotten. But yeah, that's definitely not the focus in F1 22. Which I'm realizing is just a hard name to say.
Yeah.
Very, very uninspired.
Are there any spaces in it? Because I feel like that would make it even better.
I think there's a space where you would think there's a space, but I also am not sure if you're thinking there's a space where I think there's a space.
I'm just saying, I guess what I'm advocating is I think this game should be called F-122.
That's not a bad idea. Man, this series has been going for a long time. it is very much a sim game, to the point where, you know, the marketing has like the actual drivers in F1 talking about how true to racing it is. And, you know, that's a big part of F1 is the drivers will train in a sim.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently this is kind of equivalent to that, as real as you're going to get.
Dennis, are you going to become an iRacing guy?
Yeah, now I got to buy a $3,000 rig and all that.
Oh, you can get them for cheaper than that.
Your kids are going to be so hungry, Dennis. So hungry.
No, I'm staying away from iRacing. I've only played games that come to me free because the first hit is always free. So I will upload to the backstage and we can put in the notes an image of my... quote unquote, like heavy quotes rig. Let me see if I can find it here.
Have you used this as an excuse to make the dad joke about how cars actually have 5 wheels because they've got a steering wheel?
No, but I will at my next available opportunity.
Locked and loaded. Yeah.
just sent me a layup. So no, it's, you know, the wheel just kind of clamps onto your desk. And then the bad thing about the pedals is, like, if you're really stomping on the brake without something kind of bracing the pedals, you'll just kick the little pedal thing across the room. And so my go-to was a Michelob Ultra beer box.
I would have thought that the Michelob Ultra beer box would be a little bit, is that because the box is stopped against the back rail of your desk that it doesn't?
Is, yeah. Okay. There's a rail through the desk, but I chose that because I've heard that lighter is faster when it comes to rating. So
see, that's the thing. The Michelob Ultra beer box gives you extra dad points.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, that was good enough to get me going. It is really, really cool to sit down and kind of play a sim of racing an F1 car. And you know, you watch them going around the track and you just don't realize how powerful it feels to be in until you're doing it. One thing I immediately noticed by driving with a racing wheel, I've never liked doing, cockpit view.
Okay.
I've always liked a third person view or something that just gives me a little more sense of what's around the car. Installing the racing wheel, like, it feels so much more comfortable to be in the cockpit when you're driving. Mm-hmm. Even though your field of view is technically more limited, it just feels so much more true. Like, it feels more familiar.
Yeah.
You know, and we've all spent thousands and thousands of hours behind the wheel of a car. And so that just makes cockpit view make sense in a way that it didn't before.
Yeah. There's something about the level of abstraction, like with a controller, it feels like you're giving commands to another person.
Mm-hmm. So it's more comfortable to be on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I only say this, I've not played arcade games or whatever, where you've got a wheel, like, I know this from fucking around with a flight stick, like back with Flight Simulator and,
oh, sure.
Star Wars Squadrons, right? Is just it feels good to be in the cockpit when you're using that. So that about being locked to something on the table makes that feel, you know, feel better.
Yeah.
See, my dream controller setup is I want someone to make some sort of like 80s cop game, you know, cop movie game where you have to drive using the wheel with one hand and shoot using the mouse with the other.
Oh. So basically just one person, Lucky and Wild, the arcade game.
Yes, like that. Yes, exactly.
I guarantee you there's like a Grand Theft Auto mod for that.
That might actually be the way that you do shooting from a car if you're playing GTA mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, I can see it. I can
gotta let your homies do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was also just a struggle for me to get a single clean lap in. Like it is, mm-hmm. you know, and I've got the, you know, automatic shifting on, I've got the like visualized race line on and all this stuff. And it's like, man, I just cannot keep this thing out of the wall.
Well, I mean,
was it the Michelob Ultras?
It might have been. Yeah, I did have to drink them all before I could set up the box.
So does this game, does it do what's it called? Like ghost mode where, you know, can you collide with the other players' cars?
You can. No, you can collide with the other players' cars. I spent very little time in any situation that would, you know, have that possible. Most of it was just like training laps trying to figure this thing out. And, you know, for the few times I did get like a really clean lap together, it just felt crazy. Like the car almost glued to whatever side of the track it's supposed to be on. You go through a turn and just like touch the outside there, touch the inside there, touch the outside there. And it just all felt perfect. And that was really cool. But so training laps, and then for their career mode, you can actually choose to start in Formula 2, which is slower cars, and kind of play an abbreviated season there, and then get drafted onto an actual team and then play a season there. And playing career mode, you do a qualifying lap where you have to, you know, put together one really strong lap, which I was always able to place on pole, you know, in first place to start. And then, you know, after the first turn, I guess the AI was just tuned down far enough that, you know, I never really had anyone seriously competing with me. So for me, it was pretty much exclusively, just driving on my own, but you can absolutely put yourself into, another car. I did one multiplayer match, and may have definitely done that. So sorry to whoever was driving. I definitely took out a group of people at a hairpin. I'm gaining on them. It's because they're. Oh, I've crashed.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It turns out when you're going in a straight line. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's F1. Really cool to play with a wheel. I don't think I would have played it without one. But I wanna turn to the main event, which is Forza Motorsport. So any other questions on F1 22?
No.
Is this what prompted what the future of gaming is in those moments?
Surprisingly not. No, that just came out of left field.
Wait, did you say your next game is called Sports and Motorsports?
Forza.
F-O-R-Z-A. Oh, okay. I was going to say, they found an even worse game than F-122.
Did you say the motorsports?
I said sports and motorsports.
No, it's Wednesday.
Beads?
Yeah, thank you, Cole.
Sorry, it's been a day, guys. I am not responsible for anything I say.
It's all good. No, we never take you seriously, David.
Oh yes, no, that's why I count. Jeez.
Forza Motorsport. Okay, this is the next big entry in the series that is very long lived, but they've actually been away for I think it's 6 years.
Oh wow.
So Forza Horizon has had several entries, which I've heard described as like motorsports fun cousin.
Yeah.
It's like open world, what you want to do, cool liveries, all that stuff. Forza Motorsport is once again very much on the sim side of things. It, you know, still has more conveniences than the F1 game did. But the interesting thing here to see was, you know, you begin the campaign with a starter car and you feel like just how terrible this thing handles on the track. And then gradually as you level up the car. We'll talk about that in a second. You know, it gets better performing and better performing.
I don't think how mechanics works. Like, I don't think cars are able to gain experience.
It is so weird. So they gate what modifications you are able to do to the car behind the amount of time you have spent driving it. And so, you know, before you can put in a new exhaust system, or before you can put on performance tires, or, you know, all these things, I still don't know enough to speak with authority on what each of them do, but all these modifications to the car, you have to, you know, drive it X number of laps, or, you know, get this much experience by driving well. And then they will gradually unlock, which, like I said, it's just, you're starting driving with this like skittish, crazy rabbit that just doesn't know which way it wants to go. And then, you know, between races, you take the experience you gained and the stuff that was unlocked, and you buy upgrades, and then it performs better and better. But contrast it to the Formula One car that just felt like locked in, and, you know, perfectly made for exactly what this is meant to do. And then go over to Forza Motorsport with, I drove a Subaru of some kind, but my starter car, it was the Subaru equivalent of a Honda Civic. That was one of the starter cars. I'm like, I drive that in real life. I don't know if I want this. This is too real.
Yeah. The last like semi sport or racing game I played was Gran Turismo 3 back in the PS2. I couldn't get over the car that they started you in was a Miata. Which is like, hey, fine car, whatever. But like, you're just puttering along in this electric shaver while everybody's blowing past you.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. If the game didn't have ghost mode, I think I would love to take that in the most competitive match I could and just get in everyone's way that's like behind me while I'm going, you know, whatever miles per hour.
Well, and so then the approach to rubbing elbows, we'll call it, in Forza Motorsport also is a very interesting contrast with Formula One. It's actually a really cool use of AI. There is like an AI judge that if you go off track or if you hit another car or if there's contact, I'll say, like, you see this little kind of thinking symbol at the top and it'll say like off track thinking, and then it will tell you what your penalty, if any, is. And so far it's been spot on. Like, most of the time it's like, that guy cut me off. I had to go off track. Or, you know, there's no way he dove in front of me. I clipped him because I had nowhere else to go. And it's consistently come up and said no penalty. Whereas the times where it's like, okay, I made a bad choice. I was at fault for that accident. I've gotten a penalty. So cool to see that applied, where there's kind of this real-time judge. And, you know, you then get that applied to your time. So at the end of the race, you know, it's, you know, whatever time minus 0.5 seconds for your penalties.
No.
And man, you are gonna be making contact. You probably won't go off track if you're racing well, but particularly at the start of a race when everyone is grouped up together. It is a brawl. And there's definitely some first turns where it's just like, look, I'm going to stick my nose in between a car on my left and a car on my right and let them carry me through it.
Yeah, it's called drafting.
Yes. Well, can you draft if you're parallel with them?
No, like you cannot.
If there's sparks, then it is. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, and then when you come out of it, you get a super boost.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. There we go. Mm-hmm. That's no. There's not quite that in this game. But in general, you know, once you get the cars with some racing parts on them, they do feel a lot better. And in one way, it's cool to feel that, you know, progression. But at the same time, like, once I've done that with one car, I really don't want to do that with every car. And so, you know, let me upgrade some cars from the start rather than having to take every single car through this leveling up process. So I jumped into multiplayer as well, because obviously there's a ton of people playing this. It's free on Game Pass. And that was fun as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, being behind a racing wheel just feels cool. And it's a production. So the way they do multiplayer is every event is at like a set time. So it's like, hey, there's a race at 2:50 and 3:00 and 3:10. Mm-hmm. And only the ones that have a certain amount of time before they start are available for you to join. And you join into practice laps. So you run practice laps, you get a qualifying time, and then you do the actual race. But it's all kind of this in real time fixed lobby, rather than just getting dropped into whatever is closest to going. Which is cool to have kind of part of the game be, I'm going to drop in and practice this track in this car, while I'm waiting for everyone to get in. Like that, that was really neat. Public service announcement. And I think they say skeeted. I skeeted about this.
No, I'd rather not. Just tweet's fine.
No, you gotta embrace it. No, I refuse to acknowledge any, vestiges of Twitter.
So does anyway.
That. Yeah. but you join in practice laps, and then you have to manually switch over to qualifying laps. You get three times around in qualifying to kind of set your time. If you don't manually switch over, it just lets you keep running practice laps until race start and plops you at the back of the grid. So I felt so dumb in my first race. Because I'm watching the clock tick down to race start. And I'm like, you know, they'll probably drop you into qualifying, and then it'll, like, everyone do qualifying right at once. Nope. You choose once you join in practice when you want to do qualifying. And I guess you could say there's some strategy there. Like, you know, if you qualify really early, then everyone's got a big target to shoot for. But yeah, so I started my first race in dead last. And managed to climb up to, I think, about the midfield. I think I finished fifth. Mm-hmm. So from 12th to fifth. I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. But also these first multiplayer races, the first three, are on an introductory circuit where they are kind of setting both your MMR, your skill score, and a safety rating, which is an interesting concept. That AI judge that I mentioned earlier is actually tracking you across races. And based on how many infractions or crashes you cause, et cetera, assigns you a skill rating. And so the game matches first for, or excuse me, assigns you a safety rating. The game matches first for skill rating, and then we'll lump people in by safety rating. So drive like a maniac, you're going to get pooled with other maniacs.
Okay.
Which is kind of a cool idea.
So you're going to be on the fun team.
Yeah.
that is a really good way to handle, to handle matchmaking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Requires a certain, you know, critical mass of people playing to be able to be picky like that, but mm-hmm. I don't think this game is going to have that problem. So yeah, very, very elegant. And I'm gonna like pat myself on the back here. That your boy came out of his qualifying races with an S class safety rating.
Ooh, you drive like me. You drive like a grandpa.
Apparently not, because I also, the skill rating is a scale from 1 to 5,000. I think it was like 4,344 or something.
You didn't let me finish. You drive like a grandpa who's a badass at driving.
I guess so. It was really kind of fun because, you know, the first race I started in last place. Second race, I think I started fifth and eked my way up to the podium, so finished third. And then the final race, I qualified first because I knew to qualify now, and then managed to finish first. So that felt pretty good.
Hmm.
We'll see how it shakes out now that I'm in the racing proper. But yeah, the multiplayer is just really cool, and it's got like this kind of race day vibe to it that you're not just jumping straight into a lobby in a race. You like go in and you practice, and then you qualify, and then you do the thing. So super cool.
Nice.
It's super fresh. In my mind, I love playing with the racing wheel. So you'll probably hear about this in future weeks. The other multiplayer thing, because like when I was browsing events earlier today, the least amount of time you could spend before getting into a race was like 10 minutes.
Mm.
So there was at least 10 minutes of practice leading up to whatever race you want to join. So if you want to do something a little lighter on the multiplayer side, you can just do rivals mode, which is where you just jump on a track, set a lap time, and it picks an actual person just a tiny bit faster than you. And then you race that ghost until you beat that. And then it automatically places a new ghost in front of you. So if you don't have a half hour to spend on racing, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
But man, this has reinvigorated my love for racing games, specifically of the sim variety. Because I've got Trackmania for my arcade racing game. Now I've got some sim games as well.
Yeah. Nice. I guess in my head, I don't think of Trackmania as as arcade-y because of the precision that it requires.
Yeah.
Although it's
a weird beast.
Yeah. It would be hard to call it a simulation because what is that simulating?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a hyper accurate simulation of very arcade-y physics, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. But yeah, both are lots of fun.
In cool. my headcanon, I'm pretending that all new players are struggling not because of skill deficiency, but because they're all a pack of Michelob deep after setting up their driving setup.
Just a half rack of them ready to go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's all you got?
That is what I got.
Cool. I have new hardware as well.
Yeah, you mentioned.
Yeah, yesterday I got in. I received my Meta Quest 3.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah.
Such a bad name.
It's a very bad name. Oculus Quest is a very good name. Meta mm-hmm. is just terrible. But yeah, I was curious about it. You know, this was mostly like a curiosity buy. But I wanted to try something with mixed reality that was not a $3,500 Apple Vision.
Mm-hmm.
What in the fuck were they thinking?
That will also break your neck.
Yeah, probably. And so imagine my displeasure to find that outside of the two little like demonstration apps that they give you, the two little demonstration games, and also like the standard like interface when you're, you know, browsing your you've got the window up and you're selecting what you want to do. There really is no mixed reality on the thing yet. To which I mean the game that that comes with it, something like Battle for Asgard or something like that, quote unquote comes with it, doesn't come out until December. And most of the other mixed reality games, either their mixed reality mode is coming out later, or the game itself is strictly in pre-order right now. So I've not been able to use it to its full capacity. But that said, the actual device itself is much nicer and easier to use than the Quest 2, for the opposite reason of that, for the joke that was made about the Apple Vision. This thing is shallower and lighter in a way that really does make a difference. That cool. And the field of view is wider and you really notice the heightened resolution again, because your eyes are right up next to it. Right. So like just as its own individual product, physically it's pretty cool. A substantial, step up in terms of form factor or whatever. That said, like, it's hard to say like, hey, go get this thing, especially with how much more expensive it is than the Quest 2. Just because there's not much in the way of like a game that necessitates it. You know, like right now it's a combined library, which is good from a backward compatibility standpoint, but from a, you need to buy this new thing to get this particular kind of experience, there's really nothing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the games, so went and like just looked for a list of games that used the Oculus Quest 3 hardware specifically, right, that have been updated for it, and I downloaded a game called Drop Dead the Cabin. That's what it is.
Aggressive.
Yeah, it's a like a survival horror, like you're in a cabin in the woods trying to keep this beacon powered. You're searching around it for fuel to keep the beacon going so the people who are coming to rescue you will find you. And also fighting off zombies and other Resident Evil-esque monsters who are swarming in waves, right? I didn't realize when I got this that it was like a co-op kind of thing. primarily. So I played around with a few pubbies, and that was fun. You know, I didn't end up paired with any jerks. We just kind of died and, you know, said like, oh yeah, okay, well, have a good day, bye, that kind of stuff. Turns out the mixed reality mode doesn't come out until later in October. So oops. But the game itself is pretty fun. It is one of those things where, like, I don't know, most VR games, when you look at them, they kind of look like a fake game that was made for a movie that the like disaffected son would be playing to show that he is like either an incredibly violent person or just his brain is rotting somehow because of video games. It looks like a non-video game play. Everything, most things look like a non-video game player's idea of what a video game looks like. This one is no exception. In fact, it looks kind of like a Dreamcast game more than anything, which is not a problem for me. In fact, I wish more VR games didn't go for immersion outside of the fact that you are directly controlling and embodying the character. I wish that they embraced the artifice of it a little bit, which I say only to be like, hey, this isn't going to be the most like realistic thing. This is mostly to put you in a cabin and, you know, get that fun experience of, you know, trying to shoot accurately while being swarmed, and get the dramatic moment of, oh no, my gun is out of ammo, I need to reload, which involves, you know, grabbing a clip off of your belt and popping it in, you know, that little kind of like tactile reload experience, you know, kind of thing. And as a means to deliver that, this is here. It's really hard. I tried playing the solo mode, and the solo mode is not balanced for a single person at all.
Oh no.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's about where I'm at with that one. You know, any excuse to spend a little bit more time in the Quest 3, and man, just really feeling the lighter weight of it, and the better controllers too. Like, the controllers don't have that weird little like ring your thumb has to go through. Like, weirdly, they can track what your hand is doing without that. So Yahtzee. Which is nice.
They just use the other surveillance materials they've installed in your house.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Something that is nice about it is, you know, when you are just in the home screen, you know, the menu, it does full pass through on the video. So you are seeing in full color, but in like blurry, low resolution, kind of, you know, what the cameras are seeing. So, like, you know, I'm standing in my living room and can see this, and I'm moving like the window around and, you know, navigating it, which is a neat feeling. When you go to set the boundary, because every VR headset, at least modern ones that do room scale, you need to put up like a fence, basically. So it'll warn you when you're about to hit a wall or, you know, run into a ceiling or hit something. Used to be you had to like take the controller and spray that boundary around you to have it set. This just automatically does a scan for you. And it will even, for the purposes of mixed reality, like model the surfaces around you too. Nice. So you get like almost like a mesh of everything around, because in mixed reality, you know, it may need to like blow out a hole in that wall so something can come through, right?
Oh, that would be cool. It sounds like all the games that will do that are not here yet.
Yes. Yeah. It is real embarrassing. It's a real fumble on their part. I don't know if they didn't get the developer kits out to studios soon enough, or what the deal is. Yeah.
So I think we need to test for edge cases here. Like, does it recognize a shark pit as dangerous terrain?
Shark pit?
Will it automatically shark? What do you call it, something in the floor? A floor aquarium? That doesn't sound right. Pit. Just stick with it.
Are you a James Bond villain? What the fuck are you talking about?
We need to test this. Like, can it recognize lasers going across the room as something you should avoid?
No, it's for houses.
Wait, you don't have lasers in your house?
No.
How do you fix your patio if you don't have a shark pit?
Well, just at least summon the ghost that haunts your house and see if it recognizes to stay away from the areas that is wailing.
Okay. Yeah. It mostly is looking for like obstructions is the thing. I think it's there's like a LIDAR on it, or there it's doing something with sensing depth with the multiple cameras or what have you. I realize I'm no-sailing you on this. But if something comes in and like suddenly there's a new obstruction, it won't warn you about that. So a ghost or be it a shark or what have you, it is more meant for like accounting for like, hey, don't go this far because you're going to trip over a coffee table, right?
Yeah, it's like static objects.
Yeah. Yes. So any questions about the quest, any more questions about the quest 3 or about Drop Dead, the cabin?
I mean, I just have questions about a lack of a shark tank, but that's it.
Okay.
I know.
My priorities are not where they ought to be.
Is it a tank if it's sunken into the ground? That's the question. Like,
that's more of a pool?
Opening trap door. Yeah. Shark pool doesn't have a ring to it.
Wait, I thought to be a tank, I had to have like a cannon mounted on the front.
Ah, yes.
Yes, the shark cannon. Yeah. Anyway, also over the weekend, I finished up the Separate Ways DLC for Resident Evil 4. Mm-hmm. Talked about that a little bit last week. That's the one where you're playing as Ada. It starts out with you being a little bit more stealthy. You have a grappling hook to get around. And you are doing things, basically the what Ada is doing while Leon is doing his Resident Evil 4 stuff. And then your stories intersect at various points.
Does it continue the Resident Evil 6 style of Ada actually having no idea at all what's going on?
She has a good idea of what's happening because
that's too bad.
Yeah, like she's talking with Luis, who is keeping tabs on Leon too, and is generally, you know, you will just see Leon fighting off in the distance, or like you're dealing with. So like during the cabin survival sequence, what you don't know is that Ada is keeping one of the Higante busy. So it doesn't attack the cabin, right? Yeah. Something that is new relative to when I spoke about this last week is it gets really hard. Like the back half of it is very difficult in terms of throwing a lot of enemies at you in very small rooms. I didn't have to bump down the difficulty to assisted or what have you, but I ended up having a bit of a rough time, especially in neither version of the Separate Ways is Sadler fun to fight as Ada. Like
true to the remake. Yeah.
Yeah.
True
yeah.
to the original.
Yeah, so it's like in the original, by the time you get to Sadler, you have no ammo, no health, and he is just constantly wrecking you because he has a power where he takes the bullets that you have shot at him, and then he ejects them from his body at high speed at you, basically turning his hand into a submachine gun to do damage that is impossible to dodge. He still has that. And in the remake, you are extremely low on ammo, you have no health, anything.
Sounds like BS. I wonder who approved that design.
Sorry, BRB.
Ben's gotta go get a package. Oh, we'll leave that in. I don't know whose idea that was. I think that it was just a matter of they're expecting you to have played and gotten a lot out of Resident Evil 4, the base game. So like, this is almost like post game content a little bit. But it's, you know, it is still a marked difference, and I cannot be the only person who thinks that it was a bit of a wall.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's all I got, the VR stuff and Resident Evil Separate Ways. I want to wait for Ben to get back here, because I know that he might have questions about it. And Ben is back through the magic of editing. Ben, did you have any questions? Ben, did you have any questions about the Separate Ways DLC?
No, I just heard Sadler sucked and it got hard at the end, so it seems like it's a Resident Evil game.
Yep. Alrighty. Let's see. David, how about you? What you got?
So I've got a number of new stuff. First off, is Rabby Ribby. Yes. So it's a adorable Metroidvania game where you play as a bunny girl. And to give you an idea of the level of adorableness, the reason I actually ended up picking it up is because it was on sale for International Rabbit Day.
Oh.
So as far as I can tell, the plot line is that you are an actual bunny rabbit, like an animal that gets turned into a bunny girl.
Okay.
And you live in a world that where rabbits are almost extinct.
Okay.
And there's this like cult slash gang of girls who are obsessed with trying to like track down and capture bunny rabbits that all dress as bunny girls.
Okay.
So like so far the game has all been either you meeting one of these bunny girls and them like freaking out and attacking you to try to capture you, or you meeting literally anyone else and then being like, oh, you're one of those degenerate bunny girls.
Oh, okay.
You're also have a sidekick that's a little comic relief fairy that follows you around, so kind of you're legally distinct from Puck.
Mm-hmm.
Also can let you do a basic like ranged attack, stuff like that. And that kind of gets into the other weird thing with this is it's also kind of a spectacle fighter a la Devil May Cry, where you have a style rating to all your combat.
Yeah. Okay. So it rates you at the end of each encounter.
Yep. So far I've gotten, just a little ways through. I've done gone through one or two bosses. It's interesting. It's fun. It's cute. I'm not quite sure what the heck is going on.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, that's just been kind of fun. Any questions about that? That's kind of a simple.
The idea of it being like a Metroidvania bullet hell is interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, the weirdest thing I'd say so far with the controls is, I wouldn't say if in order to describe the controls, I would need some sort of adjective that means that they're clunky, but not necessarily bad. So by default, you can't attack in the air. You can't attack while jumping.
Whoa.
And so it almost feels, this isn't that type of game, but in terms of like the way that makes the game feel, it's almost like some of the old side scrolling shooters where you could only shoot directly up or forward, not diagonal. So like it wasn't that the control was bad, it was just that you had to deal with not being able to shoot diagonally, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's almost that type of thing where it's not that the controls are bad or unresponsive, it's just that you have very specific attack patterns you can do, and it seems like a lot of the gameplay is kind of getting used to that.
Yeah, they're not bad or clunky, they're restrictive, right?
Yeah, and way that's a good way to say it.
You wouldn't say that like Mega Man has bad controls, but you can only shoot forward in the direction you're facing.
Exactly, it's exactly like that, yes. Yeah.
Can you believe how bad the controls of chess are? The pawns can only move forward one square at a time.
Unbalanced is what it is.
Mm-hmm. They need a new patch. It's been too long.
I know. Feels like the devs have abandoned this game.
Community's a nightmare. All these Nazis. How else would you describe Bobby Fischer?
I'm someone, I deeply do not understand the appeal or point of chess. So,
Ben, do you have a counterpoint?
I'm the wrong person for this one.
I think it's one of the purest forms of like a game where it's just about looking at the different paths that you have and figuring out which the best one is.
See, I don't call that game. I call that a computer program.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But that's Robbie Ribby.
Yeah. So the next thing I've checked out is Lies of P, basically Bloodborne 2.
Okay. Yeah. I played this and had a kind of a negative reaction to it. I'm curious to hear what you think. Tapping my foot. Do not contradict me.
I'd actually be interested to hear like what was it? What was kind of your feel on it? Because I'm in a weird spot in that like I love the presentation for the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just overall the way it looks, and also because it's kind of my thing, the clothing in the game is great. I also like overall I'm pretty into like the premise and the world, that sort of thing.
To recap, my problems or concerns are not really with like the theming, although it is not given that it's not something I have a lot of affection for, and also I just find inherently kind of goofy. What's that?
Be honest, if you lie you die.
That is very bad. I don't care for that one bit. Let's just say the theming and aesthetic are not pushing in the positive for me, you know, whereas I think for a lot of people that they are, right? I think just mechanically is my big issue with it. The primary thing being that I did not see very good level or density design on display. Insofar as the encounters entirely seem to take place in a lot of very samey looking hallways.
Yeah.
And by hallways, I mean like alleyways and, you know, stuff like that. And just the general encounter mix ups were kind of bland and uninspiring to me. That could change as you get into different spaces, but it just kind of felt like they took, you know, a 3D brush that was just Victorian street and then just kind of like laid it out with some dead ends and then dropped enemies in willy-nilly. Though they did fix the dodge in terms of its kind of clunkiness and the way that it flowed into your general movement during combat, it is a game that does not have iframes, as far as I can tell. And having iframes during a dodge or a step is a pretty big part of a Souls-like, I think. Some people can say, like, oh, you know, get good noob or whatever with that. But, like, that it's been in every single one of them and is... that it's been in every single one of them makes it feel like invincibility frames during a dodge is a pretty important part of the overall formula. And to have this game lack them does make it a bit hard to swallow for me from a, like... getting used to it kind of feel, because it just means that every enemy can decide, no, you're staying away from me, staying far away from me, because, you know, you have to be out of my reach entirely, kind of thing. So those are my biggest issues.
The
theming is not necessarily a huge negative. I can look past a lot, but it is not weighing in its favor.
That's reasonable. Also, as an aside, one of my most depressing days was when I realized that people on the internet saying get good weren't being ironic.
No, they're fucking deadly serious.
Like I thought that was a joke for a really long time. I think that's reasonable. I would say my feel from it, like I said, you know, I really like the setting. I like you know, some of the stuff they're doing with the Pinocchio stuff. I'm not real far in. I'm at the clockwork cop.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling though on the gameplay, and I think this is kind of a variant on what you're saying really, is to me, I think I would have liked this game's gameplay a lot better if Wolong didn't exist.
Okay.
Because I feel like this is basically just a parrying game like Wolong with much less satisfying and reliable parry windows.
Yeah, it is closer to the Bloodborne parry window than it is to the Sekiro parry window, which is right. Which is weird because Sekiro is a harder game than Bloodborne, but not because of the parry window. It's actually easy to individually parry. It is just that you have to parry so many times in a row.
Right.
And the animation makes so, at least for me, it is harder to understand how to react to an attack as it's coming in without memorizing it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think actually that kind of leads into probably my biggest complaint with the game, which is that I think a game that has parrying mechanics that rely on memorization, unlike something like Wolong, where you can generally intuit the pairing,
mm-hmm.
I don't think is compatible with multi-stage bosses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, what I've ended up doing with, like, pretty much all the difficult enemies is I parry the first stage because that's why I'm able to learn, and then just face tank the second stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I've got problems with multi-stage bosses in general.
Yeah. I do think the weapon crafting is kind of a interesting mechanic.
Oh yeah, the distinction between the hilt and the blade.
Yeah. So far at least I'm not far enough that there's all that stuff, all that many combinations that have really been interesting or meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, I right now only have one blade that isn't super short range. Mm. So,
to give a little bit more detail on that, because I don't
on what scale? Because I would say most blades are super short range.
Well, I have one great sword and then like a billy club.
Right.
Huh.
To give a little bit more information about the blade and hilt thing, you can basically select what kind of special attacks you want on a weapon. By which I mean the blade will. It's kind of like weapon skills in Dark Souls 3, mm-hmm. or like the Ashes of War in Elden Ring. The blade determines your offensive special ability, and the hilt determines like a defensive one.
Right. And then the other thing is the hilt determines the moveset.
Yeah.
So there's a certain degree to which you can do, like, I want a great sword that inexplicably has the moveset of a rapier.
Yes.
Things like that. Apparently you can also have a fair amount of control over changing scaling.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I can't decide if I love or hate the dopey names they have for all the stats.
Yeah, no, it's pretty egregious.
I want to say like strength is like motivity or something.
Motivity. I almost said motility, but that is how you describe how fast a sperm swims. yeah,
didn't know it was that type of game.
Yeah,
no, that's what you call the dex stat.
but yeah, like technique as your dexterity is fine, but like what does advance mean? Like, mm-hmm. just if I was to say, like, hey, what practically does putting points into advance make you better at? What would you guess?
Speed?
A new Game Boy?
No, it's your magic, you clod.
What?
Yeah. Well, because you're using all the magic is advanced technology.
Yeah.
Hmm. This is probably in some way heretical, but I'm to the point I think having multiple damage stats is dumb. Just have a damage stat and let me use whatever weapon I want.
With that context, are you okay with things like bleeding or like it was Crimson Rot or whatever, things like that in Elden Ring?
I would say, honestly, I think the ideal would just be give the player unlimited free respecs.
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty close in Elden Ring. I think you can respec 18 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or isn't it just soul dependent? Or am I wrong on that?
No, you've got to get the larval tears. But I'm in favor of respecs and stuff as well, David.
Yeah. But so other than that, like, I honestly think that basically covers it. Like, I would say it sounds like I'm not as negative on the gameplay quite as much as you are, but I do think you're right on in your read of the gameplay.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that it's a Soulsborne game that is at least trying to do the like interconnected levels and stuff. And, you know, I do appreciate that there are some segments where it's like, oh, this level has like a street area and a, you know, like rooftop area. And like, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say there have been some truly confusing, like quote unquote shortcuts. Like there's one where you get out of a bonfire, whatever they call them, fight like a pair of just regular ass enemies, and then unlock a shortcut back to the bonfire.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's all I've got on that. I'm hoping, my hope is maybe they, you know, do some expansion or, you know, modify some of the gameplay some or something like that and make this a really good game, because I do think there is potential.
It's been really well received is the thing. So yeah. I imagine we're going to see more of it.
Yeah, I could see that being a good thing.
Yeah. What else you got?
Okay, so this is one I'm actually really excited to talk about, which is Payday 3.
Oh, ooh. Sure.
Oh, wow. You might be the only person
who's excited about it or playing it. Because I see lots of people playing it.
The reviews of it have been mixed. And there are currently less people playing Payday 3 than are playing Payday 2.
Yeah.
Always a good sign.
So I would say the positive of this is, like, you know, it has overall, you know, the strong, you know, core shooting, you know, kind of the bones of it, from a direct gameplay standpoint are there. And likewise, the, you know, kind of core of, like, hey, you're doing a heist and heists happen and that's pretty cool, is there?
A heist is one of the best things that can happen in fiction and or games, is the thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, honestly, to cut directly to the chase, I think there's two main issues that it's having. Or maybe three, I don't know. One is this game is much more stealth focused than the previous games.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
So the first one, I think there was only one level you could stealth. The second one, it was kind of mixed, and stealth was, for most of the levels, was very much an optional kind of, like, you know, you're doing that if you're really, really good and, you know how the level works. Whereas this, there are a couple of levels that are almost not worth doing if you're not going to do stealth. There's only one that is just straight up, like, always combat, and almost all of them, stealth tends to be emphasized. The problem here is I would describe the stealth in this game as basically being like playing Hitman without the ability to wear a disguise.
Which Hitman? Because that stealth is all over the map from beginning to now.
Yeah.
I would say the more recent ones without the ability to wear the disguise and without the any of the game kind of I don't want to say holding your hand because I feel like that's too negative, but like the mechanics they put in place to be like, hey, kind of follow these breadcrumbs and like you'll do a thing.
Forget what it is, but like you can like pick your route basically through a level, like, and that is kind of meant to show you roughly what is possible, and then it is meant to be replayed over and over again. So it is like what you're describing is more like Blood Money and before in terms of Hitman. And
I think the issue here is it very much has those route type things. It just doesn't particularly tell you about them.
Okay.
And likewise tends to do a lot of like, oh, like in order to progress farther, you need a key card. And like, that's all it tells you, like key card somewhere. And that isn't really necessarily compatible with like how fragile the stealth is. The other thing with this is you can only kill, I think, 4 or 5 guards before the automatically the alarm's going off, because basically when you kill a guard, you have to answer their radio to be like, oh yeah, no, nothing happened, you know, what are you talking about? And you can only do that like 4 times before they are just like, yeah, clearly something's up, and like call the cops. But I think the biggest thing, at least to me, is in the majority of cases there's no advantage to partially stealthing a level. So you know, there's no thing where it's like, oh yeah, we can get, you know, like every, you know, get most of the way set up and bypass a lot of the obstacles, but then, you know, maybe like, you know, fail at the end, but then, you know, that makes us more likely to get through the shooting.
That just seems like the way a heist ought to go, like dramatically.
Well, and that's the thing. And I think that's part of the problem is like, if you look at most like heist movies, they're not actually using stealth in like the Splinter Cell sense. It's not like, oh, I'm hiding so I don't get seen. It's like, you know, your controller being like, all right, you have a 1 minute window to do these complicated things.
Yeah.
And you know, it's more just, it's more timing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just entirely about, you know, delaying the start of the police response and getting into position so you can get away clean.
Yeah. Don't forget vouching for the new guy.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And my understanding is there's some of the that actually a little bit gets into what I think is the second thing here, is I think one of the problems that they're facing is that Payday 2, you know, was in active development for, I'm not sure how long, like 5 years, something like that?
Before or after release?
Yeah, I'm saying like after release.
Okay, yeah. I mean, supported for a very long time, like just a multiplayer mainstay. Like that game was like a lifestyle, like hangout game for a lot of people.
Exactly. And so by that nature, this game, you know, this game ended up being the like sequel that doesn't have nearly as much like of the features or content from the previous game. But in this case, I don't think it's like, oh, the devs were lazy or cut corners. I think it's just like, well, yeah, because that was like 5 years of content.
It's a little bit like, whenever a new numbered Sims game comes out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why would I play this when I can play the old one that has where I have, you know, the expansion where they can be witches and vampires and aliens and I can start a business. You know, why would, you know, it's kind of a classic problem of jumping to a new iteration of a franchise that works like that.
Right. Exactly. And the reason I kind of segued into that is my understanding, one of the instances of something they added post launch in the previous game was the ability to actually plan out heists and like, you know, be able to like mark up a blueprint of the level and you know things like that.
Almost do like a Rainbow Six, like old style Rainbow Six kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I think this goes across the board. You know, there's not, I don't know, I think there's as many heists this time as there were at launch last time, but there's nowhere near as many heists, nowhere near as many weapons, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. However, in my opinion, I think the biggest issue here is that this game just isn't nearly weird enough.
No.
I don't know. Are any of you guys, were you guys really into Payday?
No.
I only played Payday 2 a few times, but I didn't play it enough to understand like how you play it. So,
so to give you some ideas of the story, you know, by this point in the story, by the end of Payday 2, canonically, Scarface, Point Break, and Reservoir Dogs all canonically happened in this universe.
Okay.
Interesting.
John Wick, Jacket from Hotline Miami canonically exists in this universe and are part of the like Payday like heist crew.
Wait, so they made the fun novelty DLC skins into actual like parts of the fabric of this setting?
Yep.
Huh. Wow.
Did they involve Heat in the universe? Because if they didn't, then that's a damn shame.
No, ironically, for being the primary inspiration for the game, I don't think so. So also, let's see here. Things that have happened. They have nuked the pyramids. Also have nuked
So when you say nuke the pyramids, you mean nuke Egypt, right?
Like, nope, yeah. just the pyramids.
Right. Why nuke then? It seems like conventional arms could get the job done.
Well, because clearly you have to open up one of the three ancient portals, one of which is Raleigh from Call of Cthulhu, in order to bring in the Watchers, because also canonically the Illuminati exist and okay. are attempting to take over the world. One of the people that you eventually get heist from and then becomes an ally is a immortal person who I believe has in the past been Himmler and I don't know, basically every bad guy in like history.
Okay.
Your designer going buck wild with this game.
Yeah. I did not know any of this about Payday.
Yes. And the way you also it turns out that you eventually find that your team of like four thieves are actually like repeatedly cyclically throughout history. You know, this team of like, you know, four amazing thieves come together to like thwart this evil Illuminati force, which you eventually do by doing an occult ritual that causes your like handler guy to possess and basically take over the body of the president and become president of the United States.
Jesus Christ. I'm just imagining a mission where it's like you have the drill, but you're setting up and you're like, I need to drill into this great old one real quick. Hold yeah. cover for me, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. An avatar of Nyarlathotep is closing in. Yeah.
So also that's actually that only cool. in the good ending.
Okay.
In the quote-unquote bad ending, you don't really, you say screw, you know, the Illuminati can do whatever you want. And instead, you break into the White House because Abraham Lincoln wrote 24 pardons with no name filled in because he was planning on pardoning various like Confederate people and for the for the good of national unity when he got assassinated. But because they had already technically been written, they couldn't be revoked. So they've just been locked in a vault under the White House, where if anyone breaks in and signs their name to them, they're instantly pardoned of all crimes they've ever committed.
That sounds like something Trump would believe.
That's almost literally a Tom Clancy plot, where President Jack Ryan just like took a pad of pardons with him so he could just extrajudicially murder people, or like give them to people who extrajudicially murdered terrorists or suspected terrorists. That is real fucking dumb, David.
It is deeply dumb, although I think part of what makes it also amazing is like most of this stuff came about through like various what they call them, alternate reality games that have been in this thing. So like half this stuff, the way these missions got unlocked is like, oh, when you're doing this other mission, there happens to be an artifact you steal that has like cuneiform on it, and if you translate it, there's a message.
Oh. So Payday 3 lacks all of this. Is there a
like an upside?
No. This is basically what happens is you get a game that doesn't have all of the like cool gameplay stuff of the previous game, is also set in a much more boring world.
Mm.
It also doesn't help that the launch campaign is kind of just an introduction.
Okay.
Like, basically, someone from your past that you've pissed off it turns out to be several someones, has, like, betrayed you and, like, is sending the cops after you or whatever and steals all your money, so you guys all have to come out of retirement. And you basically, over the course of the game, are just like figuring out who it is and stealing all their money and, you know, revealing their evil business dealings. But you don't even get to like assassinate them at the end. Like the end cutscene is just like, oh, some other person that's actually the big bad just like kills them all.
Okay.
Also, in one instance, the reason the guy's pissed at you is that his father owned one of the like diamond companies you kept robbing from in previous games, and eventually just committed suicide. It's like, all right, that's actually kind of a fair point. Like, that's kind of a dick move on our part.
He just never paid for insurance on any of that stuff. He just couldn't bring himself to do it.
I don't... Well, this is a game where literally, I guess I should say, your handler, like, his whole goal is to basically prove that America is just run by corrupt, businessmen and politicians and cops. And
I think the problem isn't proving that, it's in getting people to care about it.
Well, the way you get and that's the thing, is that by the end of the game, basically the game's plots, most games kind of ignore the fact that like, oh yeah, by this point you have literally robbed like 30 banks and like killed literally thousands of cops. Whereas this game, like, no, that is completely canon. Like by the end of the game, people are like, oh, like a bank gang robbed is literally just a thing that happens every week. And so like, maybe our society, maybe it turns out money is kind of all a social construct. Like, Anyways, it's a deeply, deeply weird fun saying. Oh, I forgot. My favorite part from the previous games is one of the characters that eventually joins your heist team is just a crazy dude in a homemade duct tape mask that is just constantly snorting coke that he just carries around with him.
Okay.
And it turns out that he's actually there's some dude who was part of cloning experiments and has just created a ton of clones of himself with just crazy personalities. So this guy is kind of effectively immortal because, like, when he dies, just like another clone comes and takes his place.
See, the thing is, you're just describing a dream you had at this point.
Oh, yeah. This game makes no sense. Why am I not surprised
that the person who loves Warframe is into this?
Yep. So that's Payday. I have no idea what to say about this.
That's Payday 2, though, right? That's not Payday 3. Yeah.
No, because Payday 3 is boring to talk about. Like, I think the craziest thing that happens in Payday 3 is that, and it's more just funny for how understated it is a character just, you steal like the server of, you know, one of the people that you're trying to get back on, and your hacker character just casually is like, oh, this encryption is way too tough. We're going to need to get quantum computing.
Okay. Yeah.
Which, you know, really, in retrospect, like, in this world, all right, that's actually probably not that strange.
Like, a scientist would say that, so I guess it's not terribly wrong, but...
It's more the fact that they're just like, oh, well, I'll pop down to the nearest Best Buy and get you some, you know, quantum computers.
Yeah. Cool. You have anything else?
Nope, that's all I got. It's been a weird week.
I got two things. The first thing I thought you were going to talk about, Cole, but I finished off Cocoon. I think we talked about this last week.
It was last week.
If memory serves me correct. I have completed that game. I will speak in vague terms about it as to not spoil it for you or the audience if you have not finished it yet.
I have not finished it. I plan to. You're coming up.
I will say that it is good. It is firmly a B+, A- game. I think that it does not necessarily stick the landing of being like an Amazeballs game. I'll try and speak in generalities here, not to spoil anything, but I think probably a thing that you can see coming in this game as soon as you can see one ball can go into another is like, okay, how far are they going to stretch it? And are you going to hit that recursion button? Because every indie game likes to do that. And so... I will admit that this is a very hard game. This is a very puzzle-forward game. Not to say that the graphics aren't good or, like, design isn't good. The art style is actually really cool. How they differentiate, like, the scenes of each of the orbs that you can go in is nice. But since this is a very puzzle-forward game, that's kind of, like, what I was evaluating it on. I think there's kind of, like, a lot of, like, promises of where this game can go that maybe are not fully delivered on.
Okay.
There are some cool ideas that they introduce. Some of the puzzles are very hard to wrap your mind around, which is awesome for the idea of, like, what the potential could be. But I think they put it too much on rails in portions of the games, including kind of, like, putting up more or less invisible walls of areas that you can't go, given they do that because otherwise you would break the game. But then that's kind of like a problem is I am like Baba is you. I want to be able to destroy the program that is running the program.
Right.
And so I'm a little bit disappointed in that, even though I can kind of respect the decision in a sense where it's like, okay, that could be just a design choice to be like, hey, we don't want players to break the game because we don't know where to go from there. I guess there's another way a game has handled this is, was it Patrick's Parablocks or whatever? When you like go out into infinity, that's just kind of like a game over screen and you have to kind of undo to to get back into place. This doesn't really have that sort of option, since it's not really a discrete type gameplay. It's more continuous, since you're walking around with a thumbstick sort of thing,
yeah,
and not like arrow key directional. So it doesn't have the rewind system that those games have. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, it's like all of the games that you are like holding this up against are like difficulty fuck puzzle games, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah.
So I think that if anybody listening, like if any of those games sound too or have been too much for you, this might actually like triangulate better to a more moderate position where you can get a taste of that kind of stuff without necessarily needing to engage with that kind of rigor that you get from a Patrick's Parabox.
Yeah, you know,
when I use the term fuck puzzle game, I generally mean like one of the hentai rabbit games.
The rabbit game. Yeah, this one, I think it's more user-friendly in that sense. It's not like, there's not puzzles where you're sitting at your screen staring and like having to like think like a chess puzzle or something like that for 15 minutes to try and like riddle out a solution.
Oh, however, rub it in. You understand chess. No,
I don't. I don't. But the flip side of that is a lot of the puzzles you don't fully understand the mechanics that you're interacting with at times is how I feel about it. And so it's more like, okay, I have three options of what I can do. So I'm just going to try all three of those and see what works. And then one of them will work. And so that's like kind of speaks to a little bit of the puzzle design of it. They do a good job of, there's a lot of kind of like simple puzzles that only have a few options and you do feel satisfied when you complete it. I think I had to look up one puzzle solution because there's, like one move that you can do that isn't 100% well telegraphed that you can do. But outside of that, I think everything else was pretty intuitive. But some of the more like mindfuck mechanics that they have towards the end of the game aren't fully elaborated on. They don't fully teach them to you well so that you have a good understanding of like how they work. And the rules, you're kind of like breaking things, but you don't know why. And so I found that like a little bit frustrating. And then the ending is just kind of like the ending, but it's not nearly as impactful as something like Inside, which is not a fair comparison, but it's, I'm trying to think of, it doesn't really stick the landing for me, the ending. There's cool things that they try and it's kind of like maybe a simplistic ending. But it isn't like a, oh shit type ending or anything like that. So it's a little bit ho-hum on it. I do think the art style's good. I do think, you know, like 90% of the puzzles are good. It's just kind of didn't go in the direction that I wanted it to, but that doesn't, that's not to, you know, put damnation on the game. That's just like a different kind of design choice of how they went to approach it. So I think it could, another person with different expectations could certainly see this as like an amazing game. So, and it's not a bad game. Like that said, even with that difference in preference, I still enjoyed the game.
You do get to see a lot of cool bugs.
Yeah. I like that joke. They could never market this game as being bug free. And they do a few cool mechanics towards the end that do make for interesting puzzles. I won't say what they are, but we can talk offline when you complete it. Anyway. What else? So anyway, music's good, presentation's good. The game, I think, is selling for like 20 or 25 bucks right now. It's tough because it's like you compare that to other game. You could feasibly pay that much and not feel bad about it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's Game Pass as well. So,
oh, that's true. Yes.
Yeah.
And this is another game that was paid for by the Danish government as well, or they helped fund it as well.
It's so frustrating to see that because other governments do that.
It's like the hierarchy of needs or whatever.
Care about their citizens.
Finland.
schools paid for. Healthcare is paid for. It's like, oh yeah, let's fund video games now. We're at that level.
These games are a point of national pride.
So I mean, in that sense it's sweet too, because it is like, I mean, there are, you know, several people that worked on it and there's probably like in the dozens or so, but it is a relatively small game for what it is, so it is like an impressive feat to see what it's there. And looking back over the progress meter when you beat it, you can see all the chapters, and they kind of outline what orbs you have available in each state of the game that you're in, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting, where it's like, oh yeah, I could only possibly have these two at this position because I had to commit like this other one here and this one here, mm-hmm. something like that. So there is some respect there for like being able to design everything like that.
Yeah.
And be able to just design puzzles in this sort of like space that gets really confusing really quickly.
Hard to conceptualize.
Like what's inside what and what are your options. So Cocoon, I would give it a thumbs up.
Yeah,
I don't know. And then I think I promised this last week that these are going to be the two games that I talked about. The other game that I have is Baldur's Gate 3.
Ooh, yeah.
Which I'm still in the third area. I've actually made a lot of progress on it, though. I would say that I'm nearing the end game, probably. I'm probably halfway through the main things that you need to complete in the last area. But I think the second half will go quicker than the first half, if that makes sense. I'm doing halves by like boss battles, I guess. And so
yeah.
I know everything I need to do for the remaining two. So I think it'll go pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. That game's still really, really good. Basically just playing it now is making me think of what I want to do for my second playthrough. I think I've settled in on, I basically want to build something where it's my character's like high persuasion, maybe Githyanki, which I think I mentioned last week. And then also there's one feat you get at like level 2 spell slot, which is
Githyanki
like...
is a northern Githyanki.
Yeah, I'm probably mispronouncing that. Githyanki, I don't know.
Nope,
and then
you're dead on.
Oh, is it Githyanki?
It is totally Githyanki.
Githyanki, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not the way they say it in the game.
Oh,
like I said, Githyankis are when they come from the north.
The northern part of the astral plane.
Yeah. And then there's one like level 2 spell or cantrip you can get where it's like for every long rest you get advantage on a saving throw, but it cycles through one at a time. So like if you choose persuasion, you have advantage on persuasion until you change it out for something else, like advantage on intelligence, and then you can't go back to persuasion until you long rest. So I think I want to do all of those things together to have my main character be the kind of like conversationalist to talk to everyone, mm-hmm. and then use Asterion to open the locks on everything and do like a ranger 2-class rogue rest of it, sort of like multi-class. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to piece all this out of my head to try and think of what I want to do for a second playthrough.
No.
So I think that's kind of what's brewing on the back burner. But
question, you mentioned your main character, like do you have any more or less control over your main character than like the other characters in your party? Or
I mean theoretically you could jump between any of the characters and treat them as like the main character. It's very flexible like that.
Not theoretically, like that is the way to play the game, you know, is to jump to the person who has the best capability to do whatever you are attempting to.
It's a little tricky though, like you don't know when like an intelligence check's coming if you're just talking to a random person. You know, like so
you can't like within a conversation like
have somebody else tap in else.
It depends, like you can do save scum and stuff like that and try and do it that way maybe, but I don't really want to do that. So the kind of like why I want to build a character like this is I don't want to do that sort of thing. Like I just want to have the main person I'm playing as like be the first check for all that, and so I don't have to switch between characters for that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
What else? Oh yeah, so the third act, they have a lot of kind of like big set piece moments that you're exploring. I don't know how much of a spoiler this is of like what the setting of act 3 is. They broadcast it pretty far ahead of time, so does
throw my headphones off.
All right.
It's not all right. I'm just gonna
he won't know how to he won't know when to come back is the problem.
I'll just say it's a city, okay?
Yeah.
And it's It's fucking, it's Baldur's Gate. It's the main city, all right? Yeah. It's the name of the game, all right? I'm sorry if that's a spoiler.
Ben go for the dark side.
Yeah. I'm doing a dark playthrough of myself right now by spoiling parts of games. So.
Ben, I will never forgive you.
It's not a,
there's like, no point in me playing the game
it's
anymore.
It's the name of the game. Like, there's really no... Yeah. It's not a surprise.
They do telegraph it ahead of time, like, hey, we're going to all go to Baldur's Gate, right, y'all? I guess I just didn't...
All of Faerun is a poor substitute for Planescape.
Poor Canelos Dos.
So I hadn't played previous Baldur's Gate games, so I didn't know what Baldur's Gate was, but it's just a city on the sea sort of thing. So anyway, in the third act, you're kind of going about that city or whatever, but there are some pretty like high... seemingly like high stakes moments where a lot of payoffs from earlier choices that you made come to fruition, and a lot of the personal quests that you've dedicated time to are starting to pay off as well, and to dramatic effects as well. So this game kind of feels like The Wire, where it's like anyone can kind of drop off at any moment, like no one's really safe depending upon your choices.
And no one is safe from me specifically.
I know you. Yeah, you killed Asterion in Act One. Like, yeah, at the drop. Yeah.
What would you do if you woke up with a vampire over you? I was stand your ground.
This is D&D.
We
just have sex
clearly,
with everyone.
Anyways, I'm not going into that.
I've had sex with a devil. I've had sex with a mind flayer in the time since last week. I am playing this game correctly, in my opinion. My brain is tentacles. Swiss cheese. I'm going for the coverall bingo card with like putting worms in every sector.
Well, here, to what you're talking about, though, I'm firmly in Act Two.
Yeah.
And it feels like several of the storylines, because I've been very aggressive on pursuing the storyline stuff when it comes up. And so it feels like a lot of the storylines have gotten to the point of like, okay, well, we've told you everything we're going to tell you for now. So this person just doesn't have anything to say to you for the next 30 hours.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure from a design standpoint, it's somewhat necessary, but I would like it if they gave a little bit more pacing to the way the stories unfold. Cause it really feels like, all right, I just got to go blitzkrieg my way through Moonrise Tower, and then I'll get some more interesting story stuff.
Are you do you not enjoy like the kind of like side quests that you run into throughout the second map area?
There's fun to be had on that front. And the area I'm in right now, like Shadowheart has some interesting stuff going on.
Gotcha.
But it feels like the vast majority of my party is just kind of on hold until we get to the next place to advance their story.
See gotcha. Dennis, I feel like this is tell me you're an extrovert without telling me you're an extrovert, because like I have nothing to say to you for 36 hours. It's basically my life.
fair enough.
I didn't mind that too much, I guess. It sounds like Knights of the Old Republic format would probably be more fitting for you, where it's like you unlock things every level, every new level that you advance to, then that unlocks conversational dialogue with your companions. This one is, not like that. But I guess your mileage may vary, because I did not find that to be as big of a problem, but I also might not... maybe they're not talking to you because you killed one of their companions.
Yeah,
Oh, no, that was the best part, is when I killed Asterion and everyone woke up the next morning, like, the universal consensus was like, yeah, no, that was probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Ouch. So,
and side note, I probably have to jet as we're hitting 9:50.
Okay. We'll see ya.
GG's.
Have a good week.
Mm-hmm. And Ben.
Yes.
Look, be nice to your Asterion, all right? I've done too much.
Don't take him for granted. Dennis, leave the tab open when you leave so it'll upload.
Oh, can do.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, and so... Oh, should I go in or should I?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So a lot of the decisions I've been made leave me very curious to see like what would have happened if I picked a different direction. There's a lot of kind of like alliance sort of decisions that you can make that seem like one way. where it's like, if you do this, you're gonna, this person's gonna hate you forever. So there's a lot of interesting choices. So I will be very curious to go back and kind of see what are better outcomes and what are worse outcomes that you can get. I don't think I have too much more to say about it than that. I probably will have it beat by next week, I think.
Cool.
So it is a big, long game that is fun, but very daunting, but is fun.
Yes. Awesome. Well, that sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis is the one who asked the question this time, but I will read it for him, saying, what game caused the strongest "the future of gaming is now" reaction when you first encountered it? This could be for visuals, sheer scope, or any other element that went beyond what you thought was possible. Yeah, this is a good question. David, what does Case say?
I'm sorry, I hadn't clicked view more. Case says, playing Dark Forces at a computer store when I was a kid. I played video games before this, but that was my first first-person shooter, and the first time I navigated 3D space in a video game before.
Yeah. I remember getting Dark Forces for the PlayStation is when I got that. Yeah.
What is Dark Forces? I've never heard of that.
Star Wars first person shooter, roughly in the Duke Nukem 3D looking engine kind of deal. Yeah, like mid 90s. Dark Forces eventually became Jedi Knight.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. You play as, it's the same character.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Kyle Katarn, which is a terrible name.
It's a mouthful. I mean,
it's not Star Wars if you don't have dumb names.
Yeah, Dash Rendar.
Nothing will ever be Savage Opress.
What about Jorg Sakul? It's Lucas backwards.
Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, Morrowind really impressed me with its scope and scale, its graphics, and the feeling that Western devs could make an open world game just as good, if not better, than their Japanese counterparts. The freedom of play and really being able to do so so much, combined with a rich quest system and skill tree, plus a ton of material to read that all explored deeper into the huge lore and backstory, really added to it. It's the first game I really got lost in for a long time with past games. Even Zelda's, the lost feeling went away after a week or two.
Yeah, Morrowind is a very special game. I remember adoring it. Mostly because I felt like I was playing a single player MMO. Yeah. Ollie says, Metal Gear Solid in 1998. I thought everything about it was a massive jump forward for gaming. The art style, the voice acting, people laugh at it now, but in 98 it was pretty much a revelation. The script and the incredible soundtrack felt like a move to movie quality gaming in a way that we hadn't seen before, all the way down to the incredibly stylish menus. It just felt like a brand new era of gaming was beginning. Total endorsement of that. It's hard to quantify exactly how special that felt at the time, especially given that like Metal Gear has kind of always been around since then and has kind of become a little bit of a parody of itself. But like at the time, you know, the games had cinematics, but it was, I would say one of the first in a direction of like truly cinematic games outside of like FMV games or, you know, things like that.
Hmm. So I'm curious, what were the menus?
Oh, I mean, just in terms of like, I about said like feels very like computerized, but it feels like analog computerized. It's more about the sound design than the visual design, actually. It's a very distinct aesthetic. Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, Grand Theft Auto 3, at the time of its release, having this big 3D city to just go do stuff in was unreal, especially because my friend's group had been fans of the first 2D games in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big one. And this is one of those times where it really does feel it. you feel that a lot of our listeners, or at least the ones who participate, are all roughly around the same age that we are, because Dark Forces, Morrowind, Metal Gear Solid, and Grand Theft Auto 3 are all like, I remember my first blush with these.
Yeah, all that formative ages, teenage years. Yeah.
I remember Grand Theft Auto just as. That was the primary moral panic of my childhood. Like, I was a little bit after Satanic Panic. Mm-hmm. So, and likewise after, like, Doom being the game that's corrupting the youth.
Yeah. There was some, like, heat around Mortal Kombat, I remember, from being young. To the point where, like, people thought it was weird that, like, my dad would take us to go play it, to go play the arcade machine at the front of the Hills department store, you know? Yeah. So there is that. Again, with those things, it's very hard not to get super local with David because we grew up together.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, totally. I know that machine.
Yeah.
Mansfield majority now.
Yeah. Take that, Ben. Let's see, Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says Kingdom Hearts felt like felt like the perfection of graphics couldn't get any better. Maybe it's because I was playing Ape Escape, and my God, is there a massive jump in graphics, gameplay, and seamless transition between the gameplay and the cutscenes, except for the full voiced FMV sequences.
Yeah, never played Kingdom Hearts. I will take your word for it.
Really, I'm surprised. Have you like even a little bit?
Nope, never.
Did you ever have a GameCube?
No, never had a GameCube. Although Kingdom Hearts is PS2.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, egg on my face then.
No, I just wanted to clarify, just because I didn't. Basically, there was spinach in your teeth, and I didn't want you to say that in front of somebody else, somebody more passionate about these matters.
See, so I don't think the GameCube actually had any non-Nintendo games.
I was going to say Eternal Darkness, but Nintendo published that, so. Yeah. Nicholas writes, Omicron the Nomad Soul, the cinematics, seemingly living, breathing world at the time, was also my introduction to David Bowie, as well, blew my mind as a 9-year-old. Man, that's a goofy game. That was the game that David Cage and Quantic Dream made prior to Indigo Prophecy / Fahrenheit.
Hmm. So he's actually made a good game at some point.
People highly regard Omicron the Nomad Soul. It is hard to go back to. Is one of those things.
I feel like a lot of Quantic Dream games are hard to go back to because they lean so heavily on the graphics.
I'm seriously batting around doing Heavy Rain for Hexcrank.
I mean, okay. By definition, if they're hard to go to the first time, they're also hard to go back to.
Yeah.
You're describing Beyond Two Souls now.
Yes. David, what does Threnza say?
Threnza says, the opening cutscene for Final Fantasy... I'm sorry, I will explain why I'm laughing afterwards. The opening cutscene for Final Fantasy VII, seeing that in a video game, blew my kid mind. I'm laughing because I think we've mentioned it before, but I played it on the Final Fantasy VII on the PC.
So yeah, you had a bug where it's upside down cinematics?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So that's why I started laughing. But anyways, I remember that, and I also remember being shocked by the fact that they then immediately dump you into, so we just committed a major terror act.
Yeah.
Kind of accidentally killed thousands.
But, you know, we don't have to face up to that. That's fine. Also, they're categorically right. There's not a lot of ambiguity to it, actually, in the grand scheme of things, which undercuts the any kind of gray that they're going for in that. But yes, it was shocking to see that you are playing as a bunch of eco-terrorists.
Just that's literally, I think, like, the first piece of dialogue in the game is... someone telling you that the bomb you set up, like, screwed up and just destroyed an entire city district.
Yeah, I forget if that detail is present in the original. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Jack say?
Jack says, how could anyone forget the first slur they heard over a microphone when playing online in Halo 2?
Oh, man. Those were the
days.
Those continued to be the days. Oh, man. Grumpy Grizz says, Grand Theft Auto 3. I was a freshman in college and was hanging out with a friend in the dorm. They put on Grand Theft Auto 3, and it felt like you could go anywhere or do anything. Morrowind also had a similar reaction when I played it two-ish years later, which was a game that I stopped playing for the fear that it would take over my life and make me fail my classes. Yeah, it'll do that. Man, people need to stop talking sugar on Morrowind, because I do not have time to replay that. Are you guys there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, cool. There was.
I was not saying anything in order to not influence you to replay Morrowind.
Oh, okay. There we go. Okay, I was worried. It's okay. Solidarity. If you don't respond. I didn't want you all to be gone.
It's our silent support, Cole.
Yes.
I definitely feel that. That's like one of my greatest fears, is that, you know, people will just be gone.
David, what does Random Sum say?
Random Sum says, I was going to do two, but actually, I'm going to do three.
Oh, wow.
First was when I heard voice narration during the intro to
Yeast,
book 1 and 2 on TIG 16 Sid.
TG. Oh, you're making fun of me. No, that's how you pronounce these. TG 16 CD. Yeah.
Yes. Second, when I heard the theme to Lunar on Sega CD with its voice lyrics and would just sit listening to it for 30 minutes on repeat. Finally, Carmageddon 2 was a great game that allowed me to understand the exploration of 3D worlds that was to come. And I remember explaining to people older than me that we would have virtual museums to explore someday, and how creative artists would use that in ways we could barely imagine at the time.
Yeah, and then Arcane Kids gave us Bubsy 3D at the James Turrell retrospective. It's the people who did the Sonic Dreams collection joke game. Yeah. Some people got that.
Sorry, that time I wasn't commenting because I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm silently supporting you again, Cole.
Ben, what does Manioff say?
Manioff says, when they released a Killzone and Uncharted game, among others, on the PS Vita and marketed them to be as big as the console releases, they were about 65% of the way there. I felt like handheld gaming would take everything by storm, but that really didn't happen the same, even with the Switch and the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
I feel like we're in a weird world where, like, mobile or like handheld gaming is ironically more advanced than it's ever been and also no longer exists.
Yeah, everything is converging toward, you know, get you a man who can do both kind of deal.
Yep.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm down for that. My answer is going to be super goofy, and it's one that I brought up before.
I think we have one more.
Oh, we do have one more. Wait, I need to reload. So
but to be fair, it is an answer we've already said, so I guess we could skip David. But
yeah, David says, I replayed the Final Fantasy VII demo multiple times while waiting for the actual game to come out. I thought the graphics could never get better, which I was wrong. That was nothing compared to when Barrett turned to Cloud or Tifa and said, God damn it, for the first time. Yeah, Barrett's swearing. And having little computer people who would swear... it was transgressive and did make it feel adult, you know, in a way that is superficial but also meaningful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, my answer, it's something that I have talked about many times before, but in the original Splinter Cell, there in like one of the first couple of levels, there is a point where you are walking in and out of like a walk-in freezer, and you know how walk-in freezers have those plastic flaps? Yep. That are there to keep the cold air in, but still let you walk in and out without having to open up a door. Well, this game had those, and it modeled them in real time, so they were physics objects. And I just spent, I don't know, several minutes and it's hard to tell. I lost track of time just walking back and forth between them, because you have to remember, like, up to that point, I think, like, physics modeling, I had only prior to that point seen it done like as the entire point of, like, Jurassic Park Trespasser. But it was done very poorly, and it got in the way of everything there. But to see that kind of effect, responsive, you know, physics kind of things, not like a pre-programmed animation, but like the actual world bending around your character literally.
And also put so nonchalantly, it's not like, yes, the focus or anything. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, hey, here's an extraneous detail that we can afford to throw in to make this world feel a little bit more real. That's a big point. That's what I was working toward, Ben. Yeah, that was one of them for me.
And in terms of, like, you know, the premise of, like, this is the future, it was very funny that there was definitely an era where that was a flex that was in a bunch of random games.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There were definitely, like, I don't know, maybe the first time I saw, like, Super Mario RPG, and I was like, hey, this is a game that looks and feels 3D, even though it was a pretty obvious trick. Yeah,
that was weird just for, like, how much better the graphics were than everything else on the system.
Mm-hmm. They were just doing the Donkey Kong Country trick, but it, you know, was impressive.
Trespasser, definitely the high point for a health bar system in video games.
I am sad that I have had dinos biting me, but I can take some solace in looking down at just some miraculous cleavage. Yeah, no, for people who aren't aware, Trespasser, you play as a lady, and your health was indicated, because they didn't want to have any interface up, your health was indicated by how filled in the heart tattoo on her boob was. So you could look down, and it was impressive to have the character's body modeled at the time, you know, just because every first-person shooter, you were just hands holding a gun attached to nothing. But also it was very clearly fan service kind of thing, like, hey, here's some cleavage.
Not to be too kids these days, but I don't think people can comprehend that Tomb Raider was, like, a horny game for its time and place.
Yes. Yeah. The nude code rumors abounded. David, how about you, besides Trespasser?
I think one of them for me, I know in terms of, like, being something that, like, oh, this is the future, but in terms of a game that really felt a lot more advanced than other games of its era was Perfect Dark.
Okay.
You know, I think partially because of how blatantly it was a game made for people who liked GoldenEye.
Yeah.
But then had significantly more, I guess, kind of like some pseudo Deus Ex style kind of elements, and, you know, the ability to just screw with the AI on the multiplayer bots, or even having multiplayer bots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah, I can see that. No,
unfortunately,
Ben.
The frame rate, not so much.
Yeah, no.
I got, like, three answers. So I was going to shout out Myst for being, like, a huge one, and, like, oh, I didn't know computers could do that or be this good.
Mm-hmm.
And having, like, a compelling narrative at the same time embedded in the game, I thought was both, like, pretty high watermarks.
Preaching the choir here.
And then two, like, personal things for me is, like, seeing Mario 64 for the first time at, like, the Toys R Us. That was, like, my first, like, 3D game experience, and so I was just, like, blown away by that.
I very specifically, like, even before the game was released, had had one of my parents drive me out to the Blockbuster, mm-hmm, where they had the demo for Mario 64 set up.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other one was Halo 1 was my first interaction with two thumbstick controls like that, and that, like, blew me away. Is like, yeah, this is so intuitive, like, I don't know why we didn't do this before.
Yeah,
so
I do remember Halo 1, strangely enough, that the way they trick you into calibrating, like, the inverted controls, for some reason was super impressive to me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Look up, and then it checked your input for what you did instinctively. Yeah. All good answers. I would say even, like even before, oh man, this goes way back, but even before Super Mario 64, I had a similar experience with going and playing a demo at Walmart of Star Fox, which was the first polygonal 3D game that I had seen. And it was so exciting. Man, a lot of good memories here. Games are good, actually.
It is a wild thing to have lived through, to witness that advancement.
I think the weirdest thing for me is realizing how bad camera controls were on 3D games, like, the first time around. Just, well, by which I mean the fact that there weren't any.
I mean, that was a bit of a mercy in a lot of cases, because ones that did give you control were very bad.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. This was a good question, Dennis. Thanks, Cole. Big thanks to him in absentia for posting this. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to come out on Monday afternoons. The end thought. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and dang it, how we feel about them. Let's see who should go first. I should have pulled up the backstage channel. Ben, what did Sony do?
Yeah, they made an announcement that's semi-interesting. They announced that they're going to make a smaller designed PS5. I guess this isn't a surprise. They've done this with all their previous consoles. Something that's kind of notable about it, though, is that specifically the digital edition, which is like the cheaper edition, is increasing in price by $50, which I'm not sure if they've done that in the past before or not with the slimmer version of the consoles. So instead of it being $400, it's $450. The disc version will stay the same price at $500.
The interesting thing about this, to me, is that the digital edition, you can upgrade it to have a disc. Like, there's an attachment you can get where it just kind of slots in on the side, which is a very good idea and maybe should have been the way they did it in the first case.
I think the way the dimensions are changing is they're basically like shaving off 1.25 to 1.75 inch. Of height and width, respectively. And then it's supposed to be 3 pounds lighter, so if you're into that kind of thing, then there you go.
If you regularly carry your PS5 around, then this one's for you.
How else are you gonna flex on the gamers outside on the sidewalk, you know?
That's like the modern equivalent of like carrying around your boombox, right?
I just hold it up over my head like and say anything.
Let's see. I've got one that is industry stuff too. Somebody should contact the National Labor Relations Board, because Activision Blizzard has committed a crime against the people who they are coercively employing. Activision Blizzard had like an all hands, like, hey, everybody come in, almost like a pep rally kind of meeting, talking about the future of the company, especially with the pending closure of the Microsoft acquisition. And to do this, who did they get to MC but everybody's favorite least irritating person, James Corden.
Who is this?
James Corden is the guy. He's a British like television presenter guy. He had a late night show for a while, but like the thing that you have probably seen like viral videos of is Carpool Karaoke.
Apparently an asshole behind the scenes.
If it wasn't
evident by his on-screen persona.
Yeah, anybody whose entire thing is making a point to have you understand just how nice and relatable they are. Nightmare.
Yeah, that's a
red flag. to which I need to assure everybody, I don't care if you live or die.
Finally, you're saying it on air.
No. Getting James Corden there to talk about the potential. God, this quote from the article here on Destructoid. He talks about the potential for AI and VR, as well as Elon Musk's Neuralink. how people...
Science demand heaps of dead monkeys.
more for my infernal engine. We must be hip deep in simian blood. And like a weird little thing, this has led most of the headlines about this, but they're teasing a return of Guitar Hero, which I'd be interested in if it was not like Guitar Hero Live, which was a huge misstep for the property. But yeah, mostly I just wanted to rag on inflicting James Corden on people.
We could make that a weekly segment if we wanted to. I think I'd rather not. There.
Yeah, I just thought that was
maybe we could get him to guest, on this show. Just saying.
let's see here. David, what is going on in the wide world of awakening people's latent fetishes?
David's having a horny week this week, gotta say.
You know. So Nintendo has released a video of
promoting Super Mario Wonder.
Coming out. Again, in terms of games that need to fire the person who came up with their name. And apparently the new upgrade in the game is a elephant fruit.
Yeah, it was at the end of the reveal trailer where Mario runs into this power up and then inflates to become this big elephant Mario man, which they know exactly what they're doing with that.
So
I'm not looking down on it, but they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, you know. So in this video, Peach is standing there and, Bowser walks up to her and awkwardly offers her a flower, to which she then inexplicably, gets the elephant power up and turns into Elephant Peach, to which Bowser is extremely shocked, pauses for a moment, and then reaches into his pocket and pulls out an entire bouquet of flowers.
Yeah.
So, Bowser knows what he's into.
Bowser likes elephant style.
Also,
I, as a public service, I have confirmed that, yes, there is already a Bowser Fantet fan fiction.
So Bowsat elephantized, just in case you want to get some throw transformation and furry stuff onto an existing TG fetish. Yeah,
this is what Kurzweil was describing when he said the singularity was near.
Yep. Which again, not looking down on it, but
word just keeps getting better and better.
Hey, you know, if it's making people happy, but Nintendo knows exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I feel like that is second only to all of Jury's costumes in terms of you know what you're doing.
Yeah. And Ben asked, just appealing to the virality and the medic nature of plugging into existing fetish communities, you know? Yeah. So it'd be kind of like if they showed Bowser being like super into Peach, like grinding her heel into his face, people would know exactly what that was. Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty funny. It is a cute video, but
I want to shout out Dennis's story if we're done with the other three.
Yes. Yeah.
Just because I thought it was funny, his story was talking about the Lord of the Rings Golem video game, and basically there were internal leaks from people who worked on the game talking about kind of how mismanaged the project was, how basically there were little to no veteran programmers on it, and then the main headline article being that the apology that they wrote after the game released was written by ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So
that's why I had four introductions in lieu of any content. Yeah.
I'm just impressed that you managed to swap Dennis when he isn't even present.
Yeah, can't even defend himself really. Yeah. Yep. And just as fall, I mean, that's not surprising about that team, or about that project anyway. Kind of seems like nothing good was going on there.
I'm imagining Dennis GPD do all of it.
I'm imagining Dennis with his, like, taking the peripherals into his actual car and driving to the airport right now.
Oh, gosh. And then follow up on the Unity thing. John Riccitiello stepped down as CEO of Unity after the debacle about pricing. That is a sacrificial lamb move. The actual problem is on the board and with the very fact that they went public and immediately bought into crypto and very predatory, like monetization, monetization kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's almost like capitalism is the problem.
Yes. Capitalism and healthy business practices are incompatible with each other.
And the fact that the choice that they made is still like a going forward decision. It's just that you can retroactively not opt into it. You can opt into it instead of being forced into it.
Yeah. So it's not a lot of hope. They're hoping that'll buy them some goodwill. But indie developers have long memories is the thing about them. Yeah. That sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Silently supporting you right now.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 476. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and support the network, get bonus shows and things like that. You can leave a rating or review in whatever podcast directory you happen to be using at the time, and tell your friends. Most of all, come back next week. We really appreciate you hanging around. That's the second time I've said we really appreciate you, which means I'm tired. there's nobody else I can ask who has a current project they're promoting, so I'm just going to lead us out. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
Stick around for some titles. All right, Dennis put his in the chat. He had two. One was Shark Tank, and the other was Mash That Recursion Button.
Man, that's just like my life.
Yeah. Okay.
I only had one. It was silently supporting you.
I like that.
I also only had one. I just had Metasol, but I'm not thrilled with it.
Meta what?
Metasol, which is watching all the Saw movies as being a form of torture.
Oh, yes. Metasol. Gotcha. And then I have Chess is Unbalanced.
I cannot support that title.
Yeah. I like Silently Supporting You. That's a good one.
Cool. Okay, that's kind of adorable. Someone made a Bowsette Animal Crossing like costume or whatever, and that's actually kind of cute.
All right. Well, it sounds like it is decided.